For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hi, this is James Avera. I'm going back to old school. MSR Cast? Oh, come on. Yes, we've been around for a long time, and we're not going away. This is James Avera from Hellstar. Support your local scene. Oh!
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. We are here on a very special interview episode. I have with me two members from the band Wills Dissolve. We have Nick Block and Andrew Caruana. I said your name right. I'm so proud. How you guys doing, man?
Doing great. Happy to be talking with you tonight.
Yeah, man.
Are you good about yourself?
I'm good, man. We're, you know, everybody's surviving. We're just, you know, jamming music and watching movies and trying to keep sane. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of Netflix.
One of the things about me is I do a show called Metal Geeks, and we'll get into some of your geeky stuff later. But what are you guys watching right now?
Right now, I'm watching The Sopranos. Although with the launch of HBO Max not being on Roku, I'm about to be cut off mid-season here. But
really?
Yeah, they're having a fight, so we'll see when I'll be able to pick that back up. But it's a good show. I'm just, you know, 2 decades too late to it.
Yeah, that was a good show. And I was watching The Good Place until there was a similar problem there. Yes. Like the entire last season is not available. So
yeah, season 4 isn't streaming yet. The Good Place is one of my absolutely favorite shows in the past, like, 5 years. It's amazing.
It's fantastic. That last season is really good. I was watching it in real time on TV.
So were we, yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a phenomenal show, but yeah.
On the 1 in a billion chance any of those people are watching it, figure your stuff out so that I can watch the last season.
And I think it'll come to Netflix soon. It was NBC, wasn't it? So they have their own streaming service now. So was it called Peacock?
Mm-hmm. Peacock,
so I'm sure it'll – horrible name for a stream service, but whatever.
It's not great.
How did that make it out of the focus group? Like, for real?
Because
nobody sat them down and said, come on.
I seriously just watched 30 Rock in like in the past month and a half, and there was jokes on that show 10 years ago about starting a network called just call it Peacock. And they had like this like a giant peacock, like, you know, like character. I'm just like, all right, they really actually went there.
They actually did it.
It's not great.
It's been a minute. It's been in a grocery store, but I actually saw something on the shelves called Soylent in like one of the health foods.
Oh, God.
I think
we're only 2 years away from when that was supposed to happen. That was in 2022, wasn't it?
Oh, great.
So
I'm not sure.
Hopefully 2021 gets better.
The way this year is going, that's believable.
I know. All right, guys. Well, let's get into some music here. We started the episode from your first album, The Heavens Are Not on Fire, .. The ellipses. Sorry, do you have to say the ellipses?
I mean, I don't think you have to say the ellipses out loud. Just okay. When you're writing it, we prefer it written out.
There you go.
For some reason, had the idea in my head that writing out lyrics that form kind of a poem would be a great idea, and I still regret it.
No, it's great. I mean, it's totally – the first time I listened to the album – let's get into the song. The song we played was So Do Not Mistake These Ashes. And I'll tell you a little story. The first time I heard you guys was from that drummer guy. And he was like, yeah, so there's a band called Wills Dissolve. He's playing on the show. And I'm like, yeah, they're from Houston. I'm like, they are. So I sought you guys out. And, man, I was a fan ever since. And I've hooked up all my friends to become fans. And we were at Brash before all this shit hit, and they had you guys on the jukebox. We played you there.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
I think what's funniest is that we probably ran to each other and talked at concerts before all that too.
Yeah,
so
I think we ran into it. The first time we actually ran into you was like at like Cactus Music or something.
Yeah, the Stephen Wilson signing.
Yep, yeah, that was a Stephen Wilson signing. That's right.
You mentioned Brash. Fun bit about that: we gave them the number one.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, the one on jukebox, number one.
That's awesome. Yeah, we were there for my buddy's birthday. Maybe January or December, and then I stuck some money in the machine and I played that. And they're like, "What is this?" I was like, "They're like, it's amazing." I was like, "Yep, go buy it."
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for that.
So let's talk about the first album. Well, actually, let's go further back. How did the band form? How did you guys start playing together?
So Andrew and I have known each other for quite a while now. We both went to Purdue University out in Indiana. And I back then even was wearing a bunch of, you know, metal shirts everywhere. And I think that was kind of my friend finder app, just, you know, throwing out the metal hooks with the t-shirts.
Yeah, you've seen that. You've seen that video of the guys in the convenience store, and then like, yes, they're both wearing metal shirts and they exactly run into each other in the field.
Exactly.
This is going to be a reoccurring theme, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Andrew lived right down or uphill from me in some kind of apartment style dorms. And he kept on seeing me, and then I happened to sit behind him at a physics exam, and we started talking then, and been best friends pretty much ever since. We had an opening for the lead guitar spot in my band back then, playing kind of a Melodeath style stuff. Isn't totally my cup of tea anymore, but we did pretty well with all that and played a bunch of shows around Indiana, and Andrew took over the lead guitar spot right before we actually recorded the album with that band. And once I moved to Houston after graduating, Andrew moved down here a couple years later. And I had kind of stopped playing music for a while just because the metal scene here in Houston wasn't working quite as well back in 2009. And I got kind of disheartened with what I wanted to play and who was available. And once Andrew moved down here, then we both kind of started jamming on some stuff together, and I decided to pick guitar back up again because I was playing bass mostly before that.
Oh, wow.
And we just slowly started writing all the music for the first album back in 2015 and kind of slowly recruiting everyone else.
Yeah, so how did you find the rest of the guys in the band?
So Sean and I were both on a forum called I Love Doom. That was a subset of I Love Fuzz, and I don't know if you've met Sean in person before or not. He's a very sociable, hilarious guy, and I'm gonna out him on, you know, this podcast, but he's a brony. Oh. And it always stood out to me how he's one of them. Like, he had like a My Little Pony icon on there, avatar on there. But I was asking him, like, hey, where do you like practice here in Houston?
Yeah.
Because he had just moved down to Houston, I think, from Michigan. And he didn't really have a spot yet, but I had just gotten my house and we were looking for a bass player. And so that all kind of worked out pretty well. And as far as Andrew's allusion to me going friend finding with t-shirts earlier, I was wearing a VetNet Viscar shirt, foreshadowing for a song later.
Yep.
In line to get free beer at Killen's Barbecue, and in he Austin? Happened to be
right here.
No, in the one down in Pearland.
Okay. Which I still haven't been.
It's good.
If you ever go to Wagyu Burn Ends,
yeah, you have to go on Saturday.
Oh wow! All
right. Saturday to get the Wagyu Burn Ends. Corkscrew's better. So, side topic. Okay. But he was in line with his wife, and
that's our new podcast. It's going to be called Barbecue and Metal.
Perfect. I mean, sign us up.
We could do another hour just on that.
We could. We definitely could.
Probably could.
Is that why you guys moved down to Houston?
No, my parents lived up north of town, and just kind of gave me an easy way to find a job because I graduated in the middle of a recession, so how I ended up back down here.
Nick kind of paid that forward. I crashed on his couch for a couple months there because all of my prospects dissolved immediately when that crash happened, because I was at Purdue one more semester, and so I came out at like the worst possible time. Yeah, I was like, hey, there are job opportunities down here, man. So managed to snag a job down here, and then with, you know, no apartment, no car, no nothing, just crashed on his couch for a couple months, and then, you know, got my feet underneath me and was good to go.
Right on. How did the drummer get involved?
So I just, you know, ran into him there in line at Killen's, and he saw my shirt. He's wearing like a polo shirt because Branson's always wearing like a polo shirt or the least metal looking thing ever, something with cats on it normally. And he was like,
in a pink polo once.
Just he did play it in a pink polo.
Just to do it.
They say real men wear pink polos, right?
I mean, they do, I guess.
I guess. I
think he qualifies, kind of.
The rhythm section of our band is very comfortable with who they are.
Yes. But yeah, so we just started talking. So he's like, hey, nice shirt. I love that this car. And we're like, hey, we're playing not really the same thing, but kind of you know, we're playing metal that's kind of more out there, progressive and everything. Would you be interested? Because he just let it drop. Oh, yeah, I've been playing drums for like a decade and a half. It's like, well, that's mighty convenient for our situation right now, because we had been with Sean for a couple of months before I ran into Branson. And finding a drummer in any metal scene is just a giant pain in the ass. It, I mean, there's a reason. Yeah, there's a reason why good drummers normally play in multiple bands if they really want to do that, because they have lots of people asking them. But he was talking about how he loves black metal and playing stuff that's like really fast. And we were like, okay, you want to do a little bit of slow stuff in there too?
Do you want to be our friend?
Yeah, he begrudgingly accepted that. And I think we jammed like a week later or something. Maybe he likes hosting people at his house a lot. And he has, we were talking about, you know, whiskey before we started the podcast, man. And everything, but he has a epic whiskey collection. A lot of scotch and a lot of Japanese whiskey.
So when everything clears up, we need to redo another episode at his house.
Host at his house, yeah.
He would be happy to host it.
Yeah.
he loves doing that, man, for real.
It'll be fun.
You mentioned, like, I want to go back to that, the whole shirt thing. It's like, it's so funny that you say that, because, like, when you go to a metal show, if you don't know somebody, you don't really talk to them. But if you're anywhere else out in the world and you're wearing a metal shirt, you found like your new best friend. Like you'll be like I've been on a cruise before, or like at Disney, or just like at like the random like grocery store or something. And like, oh hey, you like metal? Let's talk.
But it's immediate nonverbal common ground.
Yes.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Exactly right. But at a metal show, you don't go up to anybody in a metal shirt. I like your shirt. They'd be like, "Fuck you." Well, I don't care. It's sort of weird, you know.
I'm mostly an introverted person, but I can turn on the extrovert every now and then. And shows are normally one of those times. But there is a little bit of a kind of entry barrier as well, though. You don't go up to talk to someone that, you know, let's say you're seeing, I don't know, insert random band here. If that they're wearing that band's shirt and the show's right around the corner, then it's like, they're probably kind of lame.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the first release a little bit more. You mentioned briefly that you wrote the song titles to form a poem. Let's talk about the creation of the album. How long does it take to go from an idea into your full project here, your product?
Oh, God, depends on how neurotic we want to be, really.
Yeah.
Andrew and I have a lot of, you know, inner turmoil to kind of work through when we're trying to go through that whole process. I think when for the first time the theme was my idea, and it originally started off with me being very heavily influenced by the novel Blood Meridian. I don't know if you've ever read the Cormac McCarthy novel Blood Meridian. It's probably my second favorite book of all time after As I Lay Dying, which is also fantastic. Dark Southern Gothic style writing. Almost like a Russian epic written by someone in the South. But that kind of theme with the kind of disillusionment with humanity and being stuck in rural West Texas, that all kind of ended up evolving towards when I was coming up with a kind of poem, thinking about meteor shower stuff, and realizing that there was this epically ended meteor shower in 1833 that was clearly visible all the way across the U.S., not just in West Texas. But it just kind of came to mind that, you know, that can tie in with themes of religion and kind of the worst parts of humanity. And that's just how everything kind of evolved from there. Just Andrew and I tend to work hand in hand on fleshing out the lyrics, but we always build a story first. Where Andrew likes to say that we're very cinematic with how we think about that kind of stuff.
I love narrative driven projects. I love narrative driven music and video games, and that's my favorite. I just love a good story, good storytelling.
Absolutely.
And there's definitely a place for it in metal.
Any kind of concept album, that drives it home well, that's just, you know, so much better. I mean, you can have a great album that's a collection of songs, but if you have a if it's good start to finish and is telling an awesome story, just, you know, one cohesive thing, it's just that much better. And so I like to say for the first album that Nick built the skeleton and then I filled in a lot of the guts.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And
Sean also wrote the third song has a lot of writing from Sean.
So is it a concept album or is it a loose concept?
Oh, it's very much a concept album.
Okay.
Yeah, straight up concept album.
And I'll state on the record that we will continue doing concept albums throughout the entire length of this band, however long we can keep this going with, you know, halfway decent ideas.
So what are some of your favorite concept? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, every one of them is going to be a story.
What are some of your favorite concept albums of all time?
Still Life.
Yeah.
Crimson.
What's that? I'm sorry, Andrew.
Crimson.
Crimson, yes. Thank you.
By Edge of Sanity.
Yes.
Anything by Arion.
Yeah, any Arion.
Yeah.
His whole career is his one long story, which is what I love about him.
I absolutely love him. I think I had already loved concept albums before I heard Arion, because I arrived at him with The Human Equation.
That's where I first jumped on, and I wish I'd known about him before, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a top five album, irrespective of genre.
Definitely.
You know, that's a Desert Island album.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Totally on board with that one.
Yeah, but Origin's responsible for driving home that concept album love deep into my heart, never to escape ever again.
Yep. I'm so happy that a local artist is going to be on the new Arion album.
Cammy's fantastic. So cool.
That's absolutely awesome.
We're going to have her on the show soon because I just want to pick her brain about working with Arion. It's so amazing. Yeah. And he's such a...
All the Arjun questions.
Yes. I mean, I've actually been lucky enough to interview him before. He's such a nice guy. He cares about his fans. He cares about what he does. He'll respond to people on the internet and just... He's just such a caring creator. He's a living legend. He really is. When I was in school, I went for film and video, and I sort of shared this video for a while, but I reached out. I had to do a music video project for class, and I was like, okay, I want to do something from Arion. So he just put out the Lost and the New Real solo album, and I'm like, okay, so what can I do? So I decided to do When I'm 164, that song. Do you know that song on that album?
Yeah.
So I reached out, and we did this music video in a retirement home. And he loved it. Gave us permission to do it, use his music, and he put it on his website for a while.
That's
until
cool.
they did a redesign.
That's
and
really
I was like,
cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
There's a not so subtle reminder that we had talked about doing that Arion podcast. So don't forget.
I haven't forgotten.
It needs to happen.
Transit just comes out soon. So
that's another one that could be several hours long.
Yeah.
Yes, we could do it. I think my co-host for both of my shows start getting annoyed when I start talking about Arion so much. They're like, all right, dude, enough. We get it. You like him.
There is a certain level of nerdiness that kind of goes with it.
Agreed.
But it's just so well written. His writing skills are just
I had to
amazing.
Pre-order.
And to think about how many times he did it, that concept of, hey, I'm just going to, you know, get this giant cast of characters and this big story spanning, you know, anywhere from 50 minutes to 80.
Yeah.
And have it land every time.
And have everything be together in one cohesive overarching story. Even Human Equation is part of that because if you listen to it at the very, very end, it says and he's like, that was very deliberate.
Yeah. Emotions I remember.
Yep. I'm excited for the comic book that they've done for the new album, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I got that on my pre-order. I pre-ordered the vinyl when they dropped a month ago or whenever that was.
I did the vinyl and I did the collector's box set, too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that looked pretty good.
Yeah. All right, so back to you guys.
Tangents, we have them.
Let's talk about you. I want to talk about your influences and things like that. But we have you've picked out some music. Both of you guys have picked out some bands that we want to play. So let's get into our first set of actual bands you picked out. One's a local band, and the other one is a band I've never heard of before. So can you?
So we'll start down with the theme of the upcoming album, Echoes. Everyone, pre-order it, please.
There will definitely be links to pre-order in the show notes. So go to MSRcast or go search MetalGeeksPodcast.com. And on this episode, when it comes out, it will be there.
Awesome. So it is a space-themed album. With the first one, we had touches of space in there. You know, it's a meteor shower and all that, but it's mostly a Western, kind of a gritty Western-type story, whereas this one is a space exploration story. And while we didn't necessarily spin a ton of different space-influenced bands while we were writing, it's certainly something that's, you know, close to our hearts. And one of my favorite bands that's popped up in the past couple of years is Almyrkvi, trying to pronounce it as well as I can. They're an Icelandic band. They're part of that whole Icelandic black metal scene that is absolutely phenomenal. I actually went out to Reykjavik in, I guess it was 2018, 2017, for Oration Festival, which is hosted by the, I think his name is Stephen Lockhart, or something like that. He's the producer at Oration Studios and the head of the band Rebirth of Nefast. And he put on the festival, and is pretty much every single Icelandic band, minus a couple of them,
Bjork.
Playing. Well, sorry, Icelandic black metal band.
Okay.
But it was a great experience, and Almyrkvi played the third and last day of the show in kind of a emptied out wing of a museum in Reykjavik, which was really cool. They didn't do the best job at trying to treat the room acoustically, but made a little bit of a nightmare for echoes in there. But it was a great experience to go there. So yeah, exactly. That's where it came from.
It all comes together.
But yeah, Almyrkvi is a very space influenced band. All their songs deal with, you know, nebulas and dying stars, and dying stars in the title of the song that you're going to play next.
Yep. So as you said, I'm going to try to pronounce it. Almyrkvi. Stellar
yeah,
Wind.
That sounds about right.
Stellar Wind of the Dying Star. We'll be right back, guys. Check it out.
Thank you.
And we're back to the show. We just listened to the song A Pass Emerges from Sleeping Agent, local Houston band, picked out by our guest here from Will's Dissolve, Nick and Andrew. Thank you for picking that. Tell me, I guess, Andrew, you want to talk about it a little bit while you picked that song?
Yeah, that's a thoroughly amazing album. I highly suggest anybody listening who's into post-metal, black metal, or anything like that to go check it out. It's truly, truly good stuff.
Very cool.
A wonderful blend of both.
Yep.
Shout out to the guys. They have a lot of great atmosphere on their songs, and it's great. As atmosphere, it has blast beats. Rory's a great vocalist, and you know, it's just they're a really, really great band, and we're really happy to be friends with them.
I've known one of the guys in that band for a while, Brent. My co-host used to manage his old band. So it's like that little nice. That little 6 degrees type of deal, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Brent is amazing, and we hang out with Rory quite a bit as well.
Cool. So let's talk about a little bit more about the first release, The Heavens Are Not on Fire. We've talked about it being sort of a concept, but tell me about the making of the album. Where did you record it? Do you have any memorable stories from making it?
Backlit Studios.
Yeah, Backlit Studios is the name of our recording studio, which is kind of a anomalous term because it's both my house and Andrew's house.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's a rotating, moving studio, but Andrew handles all of our mixing, and both of us actually went to school for acoustical engineering and did a lot of studio time doing the audio engineering side as well. And Andrew's a little bit more savvy with that than I am, so I help out with the miking and kind of the engineering tracking part of it, while Andrew kind of drives the boat on that, and Andrew handles all of our mixing.
Yep. Tried to keep as much of it in-house as we could, except for mastering, because nobody smart does both.
Yeah, you should always separate out mastering. We used Brad Boatwright with Audio Siege up in Portland.
Phenomenal, by the way.
It was great. He did a great job on Echoes as well, and I think we'll likely continue working with him because we really enjoy, you know, the work he does. I actually found out about him because he did the Yob album, Clearing the Path to Ascend, which I adore. And once, you know, I saw that was the guy that did that, I was like, yeah, I think we should get him for that.
Right. That's
I
cool.
think that's what clinched it. Because you were showing me the list of all the stuff he had done. And then
he does a lot of
thumb up to that one. And it was like, okay, we're good.
How was it working with him not being in the same city? You'd send him all the raw stuff and what you
Yeah, so mastering. Yeah.
For the first album, there was exactly two tries. He sent the first version and we said, maybe just a little more of this, maybe a little less that. And on time number two, we were all like, we're good.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it was only one pass on this album as well, on Echoes. Might have been two. I think it was just one. For mastering, it's kind of a little bit of part engineering, part magic.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of find a person that you respect what they do and their ear. Because, you know, when they're doing mastering, it isn't like mixing. With mixing, you have that flavor put on the album that every mixer, it's like, yeah, this was mixed by that guy. Like, a Jens Bogren album is always going to sound like a Jens Bogren album.
That's right.
But with mastering, it's more of a kind of a finishing touch, and there's a little bit of, you know, mysticism to it. And you just have to trust the person that you're sending it to, and once they hear the music that you're making, they should know how to do that with very little corrections. And, he's amazing.
So let's get into your new release that's coming out August 28th. It's called Echoes. You guys are nice enough to send me an early version of it, an early promo of it. I've listened to it a few times. I actually listened to it again this morning on my morning walk, and I just didn't want to stop walking. So I just listened to the whole thing twice this morning in a row. It's phenomenal. What I want to ask is, why did you decide to do it? So it's an EP, a one-song EP, just a... In some of my, in the past 2 years, some of my favorite music has been that. So, like, the last, when Insomnium did that a few years ago, favorite album of mine. What made you guys want to do this one long playing song?
It kind of evolved to that point. we had had an idea. We really like the Pink Floyd song Echoes, and Cult of Luna also has a song called Echoes, and Warning has a song called Echoes. And we had this idea in our head that, hey, those are all really cool songs and all a little bit different. It would be interesting to cover them, and they're all about 20-minute long songs, so then we could do our own 20-minute long song. Mm-hmm. So we started with the 20-minute long song of our own first, and Andrew already had the skeleton of the storyline kind of written out and was just looking for a place to use it. And mind you, we had already written probably a quarter, I would say, of our upcoming album. Maybe next year, we'll see. And detoured.
You heard it to here do first. This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of detoured kind of to that. But then as we got further along with the writing process, it just became evident that this could be pushed a little bit further than just a 20-minute long song on something that we would consider more of an outlier release and more of an EP. Mm-hmm. You did call Echoes an EP, and I expect lots of people to call it that. We think of it as more of a full album, despite it only being just under 32 minutes. I mean,
the line's at a half hour, right?
I would say that the line's a half an hour. There's Slayer albums that are shorter than that. So.
True. And Napalm Death's album that are definitely shorter than that.
Random. Yeah, we don't have seconds. To count grindcore.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. But Slayer's done 28-minute albums, so why not?
Yeah, so we consider it a full-length album, and that's the care and effort that we put into it. And as we just kind of went along with the writing process, that's where it ended up. We like doing our long ambient sections and having albums that kind of loop from the beginning to the end with the similar fade there. So I'm sure when you're listening on your walk, it was pretty convenient if you had it on loop, because it just kind of rotated around and you might have even lost when the album, you know, ended and began, which is our intention. So,
And listening through it, I mean, I can pick out, like you said, there's a lot of atmospheric moments in it and acoustic interludes and all these amazing things that are thrown in. But then you guys, when you get brutal and heavy, you guys go for it. It's great.
Thank you.
What were your influences when you were writing the music for this album? See, I said I called it an album this time.
Thank you.
Musically, obviously, the Opeth connection, the Ariane connection, and then some other bands that had done tracks like this. Like, you know, Crimson by Edge of Sanity is, you know, just one story. It's one track. Light of Day, Day of Darkness by Green Carnation. Again, it's just one track that's longer, but, you know, just start to finish, one thought. That's a lot of fun. And this could work that way, so we just kind of let it work that way. Like he had alluded to earlier, we had gotten to about 20 minutes, and we had had, like, 5 or 6 more ideas, plus, like, 2 minutes of outro. And so we're sitting there going, all right, we're already at 22 minutes. We're already over what we thought we were going to be, and we've got, like, 5 or 6 more things to do. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we're easily going to make the full album, like, easily. And so, yeah, just why not leave it one track? It's one story. I suppose if we ever put it out on vinyl, you could think about it technically as maybe 2 tracks. You could, and if I could do that, I might call them Black and then White. Just because, you know, at some point, like, you know, if you had a 45 that can handle 16 minutes and then you flipped it, like, well, there's your side one, side two.
We do have plans for vinyl. Hopefully they'll be coming. It'll probably be next year when that happens. If Nocturne Records is supporting us on that, and they do plan on making it happen, it's just not going to be an immediate thing. But Andrew has a couple of really geeky ideas for how to make that vinyl absolutely amazing, with just a enhanced effect on the middle of the album, which is in the storyline when the main character is entering the black hole into the wormhole. God, I just said an Ariane song title, didn't I?
I don't think we cannot.
Yeah.
Anytime you say black hole or wormhole.
Yeah. But the excerpt that you're going to play picks up right when he pops out the other side of the wormhole.
All right. So let's actually get into the excerpt now, and then we'll talk a little bit about the storyline of the concept album. So this is just a 7-minute excerpt from the upcoming Echoes album. Let's get into it, and we'll be back in just 7 minutes. Guys, we are back to the show, and that was a 7-minute excerpt from the upcoming Echoes release from Will's Dissolve. You talked a little bit about some of the musical ideas. Let's talk about lyrically in the concept of this narrative-driven album.
So the album is basically about an astronaut and the onboard computer on a mission to try to find a new way to exist in the universe. Earth is basically uninhabitable. Everybody lives on the moon, and a bunch of ships go out trying to. One of the inspirations was something like Interstellar, where that similar concept of a bunch of people going out to try to figure out something because it's not looking good. There's dwindling resources, and eventually the clock's just going to run out. So this guy kind of
was based on real life now.
Yeah. So. And it's dealer's choice as to what happened to Earth. You can insert whatever you want here. It can be nuclear war. It can be climate change. Take your pick. But Earth is basically trashed. So they're down to, you know, the last bit there. And he takes the Hail Mary option because he's kind of disillusioned with his life. And maybe jumping into a black hole is a wormhole. Like, you know, the physics checks out in terms of the math. Like, you can actually run the numbers and get a white hole. So why not? And so he takes that option and jumps into the one at the center of the Milky Way, hoping that it's going to be a gateway to someplace better. And then maybe he can figure out after that what he can do to maybe, you know, get the information back so that people can find a new spot. And it, sometimes something like that can work out, and other times maybe not so much.
It goes poorly.
It does not go well for him.
You have to read along to lyrics as you listen to the song.
Absolutely, and lyrics will be included both in the CD booklet and a PDF with the digital copies if that's your main method of, you know, acquiring music.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about how people can acquire the album. I know you have pre-orders going now. What kind of pre-order packages do you guys have, and, like, special editions and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it's all going through our record label, Hypnotic Dirge Records. They are located out of British Columbia, Canada now. They were in Saskatchewan, but Nick, the label head, recently moved, so that's where they're out of now. But there are varying packages. There's no special edition as far as CD goes. I'm sure once we do vinyl, we'll do multiple editions, hopefully. We'll see how everything goes with that, but there's packages where you can just buy the CD by its own if that's what you want, or you can buy the CD with a t-shirt that we had made by an artist out of Portugal called Barador, who does really, really cool kind of atmospheric black and white work. I think the t-shirts turned out fantastic. There's a full-blown package where you can get pretty much everything produced for the album. We have some NASA-influenced shoulder patches that are, I think the first 100 CD sales period will get them. But then there's also a bundle that has those included. And we had some guitar picks that we sent up for those. I think that about sums up everything. I think there's some stickers in there as well. But it's all on the Hypnotic Dirge website or their Bandcamp. So we have our Bandcamp page for the Echoes album up right now on the Hypnotic Dirge Bandcamp page. We do not have it on our own. We're just funneling everything through there. We'll end up setting up kind of a supporting link on our Bandcamp page. But everything's funneled through the record label, and you can pre-order the album right now for, I think, $5 Canadian if you want to just do the digital copy. But when it is released, the ethos of Hypnotic Dirge Records is that you pay what you want for every single album. So if you're on a lower budget and you want the music later, then you can go grab it there for free later, or toss us a buck, or whatever fits your budget. If you maybe really like the album, have a little bit extra to spend, but don't want the t-shirt or anything else, then you can pay whatever you want on Bandcamp.
I know, I definitely want one of those patches. I saw that and I was like, I gotta get
those patches. Those patches are so sick, man. I'm so happy with how that turned out. And they're actually designed by Sean's wife, Caitlin.
Oh, very cool.
Who is a great artist.
That was something I didn't even know I wanted until I saw it.
Right?
And I need to find like a jacket or something to just put that on. I have an old leather jacket that might end up being converted.
You don't have a battle jacket yet?
I don't. I'm not really a battle jacket kind of guy.
I didn't start one until maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. But I've had
with patches. All the festivals I go to, I've kind of thought about it. Like, yeah, it'd be cool to kind of have little memorabilia from festivals. But
yeah,
I think I'm too far along now.
My back patch, my main back patch is an Anthrax Persistence of Time that I've had since like 1990 or 91, something.
Cool.
I never put it on anything. I was like, just never had a back patch or a jacket to put it on, but it's been fun putting it together, you know?
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
You get to wear your love on your sleeve, so to say.
Exactly.
So we will definitely put a link to Hypnotic Dirge Records in the Bandcamp, and any place we'll put a link to where people can actually pre-order and get everything to you guys in our show notes on our website. So,
cool. Greatly appreciate. Very cool.
How many? I know the first album was like a limited edition. How many? How many is gonna be printed this one? Because you said the first 100 are gonna have patches, right?
Yeah, the patch will be just automatically included with the first CDs.
Cool.
Due to the geography differences, we won't be doing any signed copies right now. Although, if you see us at a show, whenever that's going to happen again.
Yeah, right.
Then be happy to oblige with that. But I think with the vinyl, we might have a more limited edition where there's something signed and numbered and all that fun stuff.
Yeah,
keep in mind there are still copies of the first album with no numbers or signing on them that are an option to buy with the Echoes release. There are still a couple of copies left up in Canada, and I think we have a couple here. It might be due for a reprint with the Hypnotic Dirge logo on them relatively soon.
Did you have this? The first album is not available on vinyl yet either.
No, it is not. No. We're hopeful. There's been some requests, but vinyl's kind of a finicky business. There's a lot of upfront money that has to go into it, and there is a market for it. But you know, we're a smaller band. Hopefully, we'll get to a little bit of a bigger level with this release, or maybe the next one, have a couple more ears paying attention to everything that we do. But right now, you know, if you have 20 people saying, hey, I would totally buy that on vinyl, that isn't necessarily enough for someone to commit to.
And then only five people actually wind up buying it.
Exactly. And for you know, Hypnotic Dirge is a one-person label, and he does a ton of excellent work and goes to bat for us, and Nick is amazing. But, you know, that's a lot of upfront money, and I think, you know, if everyone goes out and buys Echoes and buys all the bundles up with the pre-order, then then vinyl for Echoes is a lot more likely to happen within the next couple of months. I know he has some cool stuff coming up with some other recent releases. For Lesson is a cool band on Hypnotic Dirge. It did something recently. Altars of Grief, who we're friends with, and Damien is actually a guest vocalist on this album.
Is he really?
He is.
I love the Altars of Grief album that came out last year.
Yeah.
The Iris from, Iris is incredible. So he does guest vocals towards the end of the album.
I'm going to have to buy a physical version so I can and look at all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. His part is pretty much just cut off after the excerpt that we're doing. There's a Funeral Doom part that has me doing vocals, then Andrew doing clean singing, and then Damien comes in.
I definitely remember that part.
And it sounds like, you know, the ghost of David Gold from Woods of Ypres, because, he has this ability to channel his, you know, unfortunately deceased spirit into his music.
I'm glad you mentioned David Gold. He was such a phenomenal musician. I did a tribute episode right after he had passed, and I ordered a bunch of the vinyl and some CDs from his estate right after he passed, and I got one of the last very copies of the 7-inch Home EP that was signed by him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's legit.
Yeah. Let's go into we talked a little bit about we've talked about some of your influences and stuff like that. Let's really dive into it. What was that first band or song you heard? You're like, you know what? This is something I want to do in my life. This is something I want to be a musician like this.
Ooh.
Steve Vai's Passion and Warfare, because I was simultaneously introduced to both Devin Townsend and Steve Vai.
Hell yeah. Most people don't say that album.
That was the first one that I had listened to. I mean, obviously there are ones that people consider to be better, but man, there were a couple tracks on that that just blew me away. And I had not really taken guitar seriously before Steve Vai.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's the first person I credit with getting me to take guitar playing seriously. Like, this is what you can do with it. Whoa. Like, that was a quantum leap forward. And then, you know, all the people surrounding him, like, you know, you're in Vase, you're Joe Satriani's, you're Eric Johnson's, all of a sudden the world for, you know, guitar seemed just that much more vast to, you know, 17-year-old me sitting in my bedroom, just woodshedding. Cause before that, you know, it was like, okay, I got into guitar playing, either wanted to be Kirk Hammett or Kurt Cobain, for real. Like, it was the grunge scene and the thrash scene. I liked both a lot. And then all of a sudden, whoa, there's this whole new thing to try to emulate, you know, to some degree or another.
Yeah, and to further drive home the difference in guitar playing skills between Andrew and I, my initial kind of thing was Rammstein's first album, their self-titled album. I think I listened to it right on the tail end of the release schedule when Zane Zook was coming out, and they had like their Live Aus Berlin DVD, and just watching that and probably terrifying the ever-living shit out of my parents, just their stage show and everything, is like, man, this is really cool stuff. And they just kind of, I think that's about when I got my first guitar.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good time for someone to actually be semi-serious about everything.
Yeah, because I think at that point of your life, you really start to discover what makes you tick and what kind of music you like and what bands you like.
Yeah, exactly. When I was living, I partly grew up in Hungary in Eastern Europe or Central Europe, if you want to call it that. Yeah,
I was born here and lived here my whole life.
Oh, fair enough. Hey, Houston's an awesome town. We love it. But yeah, I remember like late nights, you'd have Viva Zwei, the TV station, and VH1 would always switch over to like mostly metal playlists around 10 or 11 p.m. or something.
Oh, really?
And I just remember like sitting in my room with my crappy like 12-inch TV, my face up against it, watching like mostly European heavy metal bands. And that was
a lot of power metal.
There is a shit ton of power metal, man.
Yeah.
So much power metal. But there's also, you know, the industrial side of things. And that was about when Children of Bodom and In Flames and Dark Tranquility were pretty much in their heyday.
Yeah.
And so there's a good amount of that. And there's a good amount of that kind of symphonic black metal stuff, like Cradle of Filth. Yeah, Dimmu and Cradle of Filth.
Yeah.
God, I remember seeing my first Cradle of Filth music video.
That was like me back in the day. It was Headbanger's Ball.
That's some Edgelord stuff.
Which one? I'm sorry, Andrew.
He's just saying it's Edgelord
stuff.
Oh. Yeah, for me, it was like.
Day, that seemed pretty hard, and then you discover it's not compared to what else is out there.
For me, like the late 80s, early 90s, like Headbanger's Ball, it really helped influence a lot of what. Because they would play like three extreme music videos in a row, like in the Headbanger's Ball, you see like Napalm Death and Obituary or Death or something along that line. But yeah, that was it for me. That's how I got into a lot of this stuff, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't start watching Headbanger's Ball until it was the watered down Jamie Josta version when I was in high school.
Speaking of Napalm Death, though, that's Nick's text tone for You Suffer.
Is it really?
You Suffer is my text tone. Quite a while.
Yeah, he had me make it for him years ago.
You need to email that to me again because I have my new phone and I never ported all that over.
How many times does it just play every second until somebody answers the phone? Keep it going over and over.
It's the text tone. So if anyone rapid fire texted me, then you'd have a hurrah, hurrah, hurrah over and over again. But I mostly keep my phone on silent. So you
know. I was in a band, you know, back in like 93, 94. It was just small type thing, but we decided to play You Suffer as many times as we could in a row. And that was like our saying. We'd play it until we got bored of it. We're like, all right, we're done.
Yeah. All right, we're done. Practice is over.
I bet it was funny until about time number 7 or 8, and then it just kind of.
Yeah. Maybe by 3 or 4, you're like, all right, we're done.
You're done with it, yeah.
Like, I think SOD even played that, like, at one of their, like, on one of their live albums. They're like, all right, we're going to do a bunch of songs in a row. And that was part of it. It was like, You Suffer.
Perfect.
So speaking of
that one, the time they did all the ballads, right?
Yes, exactly. The ballad of Jimi Hendrix and the ballad of yeah. I'm an SOD nerd, so
fair.
Speaking of cover songs, what songs would you guys want to record both live or record onto an album and then actually do live? What would be that special songs?
Cover song?
Echoes would be great. The Pink Floyd version would be something that, you know, obviously we started going down that road, but don't get your hopes up. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're already so deep into writing like our third album right now.
Yeah.
Quarantine's kind of amazing for making progress on that front.
Yeah, I was going to sort of bring that up. I was going to ask you guys, how is quarantine affecting the band?
You know, we haven't practiced since probably February, because we're so deep into finishing up recording in the beginning of the year that practices have pretty much been put on hold because we need the extra time to mix or record all the overdubs.
Sure.
You know, once you listen to the album, you'll be able to hear, you know, you're talking about acoustic flourishes and everything. Like, we're all about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew's super about that. And as the kind of mixer and main producer of the final product, he gets to add a ton of overdubs. There's
I like that wall of sound kind of thing.
Yeah, there's like, he has a short scale guitar that's tuned up an octave for everything, and my coworker makes fantastic acoustic guitars.
One of those little kids guitars that somebody had actually made to look like a Super Strat.
Yeah.
Like, it's black and actually looks legit.
Yeah.
And I scalloped the fretboard. I think it's like 20-inch scale. And so that's like drop G up an octave.
Up an octave.
So this album is 7 strings. The first album was 6 strings and drop B flat with one song being C. This was all drop G on a 7. And so some of the stuff I just doubled on that little guitar. Just, you know, an exact octave up on a couple of the clean parts and actually a few of the riffs. It's kind of buried, but it's one of those things where you'd miss it if it was gone.
Yeah. You couldn't layers are fun. Itself,
but textures and layers are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then my coworker makes amazing, super high dollar acoustic guitars, and I was lucky enough for him to, you know, make me one at, you know, material costs and everything.
Wow. A truly one of a kind concept, by the way.
A 9-string. Slightly extended scale guitar. So it's like a 12 string guitar, but the lowest and two highest strings are not doubled.
Mm.
So it's mostly the middle doubled, but it's a 26 and a third scale. So a little bit longer than your standard Martin or anything like that. And that makes a couple of showings on the album. And I think it'll, since it's facey, we added synthesizers to everything, and that's a lot of the layers, so acoustics maybe aren't as much of a focus on this album as they were on The Heavens Are Not on Fire. But we're returning back to earth on the third album, so the acoustics will surely be back layered into, like, everything.
Right on.
And that's honestly just a mixed thing, because mm-hmm. there are still, like, 4 acoustic guitars that are pretty much on almost every single clean section. It's just some of them are dialed back,
hmm.
you know, just to let, you know, some of the clean guitars breathe a little bit better.
Yeah.
But layers for days.
Layers for days. Going back to that cover song question, was there anything you would do live?
I don't know about live, but I would love to do Clouds by Enslaved. At some point, I will do it. Even if it's only me,
We started down that path a little bit. Clouds by Enslaved would definitely be a very good one.
Did you guys watch the live stream today they did?
No, but I have it put aside. I watched the previous one, but I was wrapping up work earlier today, so I didn't watch the current one. But
so wonderful.
It'll be
so
up
amazing.
On YouTube for another day, so that's probably tomorrow.
Just as good.
The one they did in March was fantastic.
It was amazing. It was the audio production.
When they busted out below the lights.
Yes.
Oh, God. That was,
they played Esau on this one. I was so happy.
Yes. I love Esau so much.
I do, too. I love that song. It was so great. It was just a... You know, it was an all-request set for the first one. They seem they're doing three sets.
Yeah, they're doing three.
Three. One, I don't remember. The second one is like more of a greatest hits. And the third one is going to be the new album in its entirety when it comes out, closer when it comes out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, I was supposed to have already seen that in full live.
Yeah.
Because they were the headliners at Fire in the Mountains Festival.
Oh, yeah.
The Grand Tetons National Park. But that obviously I had tickets for it and everything, but it got bumped back a year. So
yeah,
because it was, what's the name of the rhythm guitarist from Enslaved? Ivar. Ivar was the, curator for basically half of the festival.
Oh, really?
Wow. And so he brought in I think everyone got rescheduled for next year for it.
Okay.
But there's some really special sets that are going to happen.
Like what?
So I think it was also supposed to come out right about when the album actually dropped, but Bill Witch did the collaboration with Aerial Ruin.
Yep.
That's going to be performed live as well as other collaborations between the two of them. Solstafir is playing. And I imagine they're going to be playing the album that'll come out later this year. Can't remember who else off the top of my head, but it's a pretty special lineup. Oh yeah, Haunter from San Antonio, another great Texas band. If you don't listen to Haunter, listen to Haunter.
I've never heard
it's
of
like
them.
It's like early mid tier, like early golden period Opeth, but with more black metal instead of death metal.
Haunter,
nice. Yeah. They're incredible. Check them out.
Unfortunately, there were so many great tours that were supposed to happen this year that have all been sort of just, you know, temporarily stopped, you know, hopefully. Even like Insomnium, like they got rescheduled, canceled twice on two different tours. Mm-hmm. You know?
It was rough.
So hopefully something will happen soon and we get back to seeing live music again.
That would be excellent. But back to your live cover thing, I think with that question, the main issue and part of what makes us tick as a band, Andrew and I see eye to eye on 90-95% of music. But both Sean and Branson have way different influences than us.
Oh, yeah.
So that ends up making a great final product as far as the music that we write because we can incorporate more things. But at the same time, trying to decide on a cover song, it kind of sucks to try and do a cover song when maybe two or three out of the four band members actually like that song. So it kind of would make it harder to settle on something like that.
I can definitely see that. One band, listen to the segue I have coming up. One band that I'm sure everybody in the band could agree on that's amazing is Rush.
Yes.
So we're going to play a Rush song now.
Actually, I don't know if Branson likes Rush. Okay. He did play a great Rush riff on Echoes, because there's a very much Rush-flavored section of the song. But I don't think that Branson's actually a big Rush fan.
And he's a drummer, and he's not a Rush fan. I don't know if I can hang out with him.
He's more of a black metal guy.
All right. I can see that. But let's talk about the song you did pick, because it is very space-influenced.
It just fits, man.
Yes.
I was really going for that space theme on that playlist, and I actually cut an Opeth song out.
Did you
to
really?
Make everything fit? I did. We want to take a guess. It's very early golden period Opeth. If you want to take a guess at what the song was,
something off Orchid?
No.
Oh,
not that early.
Not that early. I said early golden period. Not Orchid. Yeah. It was Demon of the Fall.
Okay. Good track.
Which is another one that we started to cover, but then, you know,
I saw
not
them
everyone
on
agrees
their,
on stuff.
I saw them on their very first.
That also seemed a bit on the nose.
Yes. I saw Opeth on one of their very first appearances in America at Milwaukee Metal Fest, like in 99
awesome.
Or something. They got to play like three songs in a small room. It was crazy. All right. So.
Well, a bunch of tracks off Still Life would have been a good time.
Yeah. So let's get into Rush. This is the track Countdown from the classic 1982 album Signals. I love this era of Rush. It's just so great.
It's great.
I love the heavy synth Rush for some reason.
Yeah, it just works. And with this album, there's still like a good amount of Alex Lifeson.
Oh, yeah,
it hasn't gone so far down the track that guitar is an afterthought and he has to, you know, rip the keyboard away from Getty.
I watched that documentary not too long ago, right after COVID started, the World of the Stage, is that what it's called? And Getty sort of at one point apologized for really going over synthy for a while.
He went a little bit too hard.
Yeah, he's like, oh.
Which, mind you, Sean is building, he pretty much has built a full-blown Getty Lee rig.
Yeah, because
he has the synth foot pedals, and he has his full, like, dual rack tower.
That's
plus
amazing.
All of his bass stuff. So
that's amazing.
Whenever we can actually play live again, he will be rocking that full look.
Nice.
We need to get him the double neck bass and guitar.
Yes. That old Rick and or yeah, it's a Rick.
We need to get him some keys. He can play keys and play bass at the same time.
Yeah, part guitar, part keytar custom made.
That's right. Let's do it. All right, guys. So let's get into Rush. And right after that, we're going to get into another Wills Dissolve song from the Heavens Are Not on Fire. And we'll be right back. Coming up on 45 minutes in our countdown. Everything going smoothly. T-minus 45 minutes and counting.
Minus 40 minutes and counting. This is Travel 1 Control.
Lay down
phase for main engine cutoff. We're at 240 seconds, Columbia now, 39 nautical miles down to 42 nautical miles downrange.
And on this not cold night, we heard on this cold November night from The Heavens Are Not on Fire, from Will's Dissolve. What can you tell me about this portion of the song?
It's the closer. It's where the guy's realized he's made a bunch of bad calls and it comes back to haunt him.
Yeah.
To say the very least.
The main priest character, you know, surviving his battle with the native chief and kind of wandering through the dark, cold woods. And maybe you think that he's having some sort of enlightened moment, but he's still not great. But then it goes back to the fire and brimstone ending of the album.
Yeah, even if he did figure it out, what, you know, the true lesson of it all didn't matter because the place still burns to the ground.
Right.
Because some things can never be undone.
Yeah.
So,
a core theme to our storytelling. It's something that we kind of like delving in with. The horror subgenre is something that a lot of us really like. And I think deep down, all the stories are kind of a bit of a horror movie in a way.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cover for this
album. A depressing horror movie.
Those are the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the album and I can see, you know, you're talking about elements from the story and the plot and stuff. And I could see that in the cover. Tell me about the cover of The Heavens Are Not on Fire. And then talk a little bit about what's going to be on Echoes and who the artist is and how did you discover this artwork?
That's all Nick.
For The Heavens Are Not on Fire, that the album artwork was done by a Brazilian artist named Cauê Piloto. And you've probably seen some of his work before because he's starting to, he's been doing a couple of really good album covers. How I found out about him was he did the cover art for the Jupiterian album, mm-hmm. Terraforming. And I was kind of struck by the style of it. I thought it was really cool. I'm a big, really, really big art nerd. Part of it is, you know, living in Europe for quite a while. And my wife is actually also like really big into art and has done paintings herself. And we both just love geeking out at art museums. That's one of our kind of common bonds. So I really like going deep down that rabbit hole. But I found out about him through the Terraforming cover. And he also, I think, it was the same year as The Heavens Are Not on Fire. He did the cover artwork for the Un album, Sentiment.
Which,
if you haven't listened to that, man, that band is so beyond amazing.
Yeah, one of the better Funeral Doom releases in the past decade, for sure.
That's UN, right?
UN, yep. Yeah. Out of Washington.
Very cool. So you mentioned you geek out a little bit. So one of the other shows that is part of what I do is called the Metal Geeks Podcast. And it's run by some of – we're metalheads, but we geek out on other things, and that's why that show was created. So we talk about metal. We also talk about video games and comic books and films and all that crap. Mm-hmm. So here's a time of the show where you guys get to geek out. What do you guys love to geek out on, be it film – video games or whatever?
All of the above.
Yeah, quite honestly. All of it.
Film. Nick's more of a film guy. I like film. I like video games. I play a lot of video games. Besides guitar playing, that's probably my number one hobby at this point, especially during COVID.
Yeah. Me too, yeah, for sure. What are you playing right now then?
My number one still, but it's, you know, kind of varied. There's a lot of different aspects of everything. I think you know, artwork is something that I definitely geek out a lot about. Mm. Film, I used to be really, really, really heavy into. I actually made like 2 short films, and I still have my full like filming setup. But I kind of burnt myself out. Just feel like every weekend I was trying to cram like 3 or 4 art house movies into like one day, while like Saturdays, while my wife would be working, I would just be sitting at home watching as many like Criterion Collection or other
right.
He went all the way down the rabbit hole. You know, like something like Deathspell Omega wouldn't be something for most people.
Mm-hmm.
He was watching like the film versions of that kind of thing.
Nice.
Where it was like all the way esoteric.
Yeah. really got into the whole like contemplative film movement, which kind of translates to the music side. I'm the main driver of a lot of our ambient parts, because that's something Andrew and I both love, but that's something that I feel like that connection with, because for film, I really like the ambiance kind of thing. You know, you have your old Carl Theodore Dreyer stuff like Vampyr, that is one of the most atmospheric movies ever. And I really like Béliszar's directing. That's what Andrew is alluding to. He's a Hungarian director that thinks that the 11-minute Kodak roll of film is a form of censorship and limitation. So he literally has his shots with lots of movement and choreography and everything, but his shots like the full length of the real film. Good stuff. He actually worked with a Hungarian author called László Krasznahorkai, who wrote some really great books. His main one is called Sátán Tangó, which is kind of a allegory to the communist regime in Hungary, with all the oppression that happened there, with people really trying to hurt their neighbors and widespread corruption. And it really delves into those topics. And it's a great both film and book.
And, you have outsmarted me, my friend.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. So Andrew, what video games are you playing? What is currently occupying your time?
On PC, I'm playing a lot of Overwatch. To some degree, I'm getting into Counter-Strike. Consoles, I just played Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, for anybody who liked the original Symphony.
Loved that game.
It lived up to everything I had hoped it was, and more.
Yeah. It was so phenomenal. Symphony of the Night is one of my top five games. I'm a Metroidvania fanboy for any of those styles.
What did you think of Hollow Knight?
I've played it. It's not my favorite. It just feels clunky. It always felt clunky to me. There's a game that you guys need to play. Do you have a Switch or PC? Okay, so there's a game that just came out called Carrion. And I played it. It was free on Xbox Game Pass. I played through it like in 1 week, and it's only like 6 or 7 hours, but it's a reverse horror game. So you're actually, imagine you're like the monster, the creature from The Thing, and you get loose in this research facility, and the whole game is you as this monster going around trying to solve puzzles and killing people, and it's a lot of fun. It's a very puzzle influence, because like you have four different levels, and your levels of character are based on like how much energy you have, your health. So to get through certain things, you have to be at a smaller health bar to do certain moves, and you get those moves later in the game, like just like a Metroid game. I can't recommend it enough. It's a 16-bit looking game, but it's so cool, so cool.
All right. That sounds like a lot of fun.
And you grow like 15 different mouths and get to like chomp people in half. It's pretty fun.
That's pretty cool.
And but the music in it is really atmospheric, and everything about that game is just hits right.
Yep. I think right now I'm most looking forward to PS5 coming out so that I can play a couple of the PS4 games that are amazing right now, because I don't own one.
Oh, yeah.
And considering it's right there and going to be backwards compatible, I can't justify the expense. But Ghost of Tsushima and the Final Fantasy VII Remake are top of my list
I am playing Ghost of Tsushima right now.
Is it as good as I hear?
It is.
Basically,
as good as
glowing
you hear.
Review after glowing review.
It's a combination of Assassin's Creed and the Batman games, you know, that type of fighting style. But it's one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen, really.
Legit.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a lot of fun.
And it's a ton of exploring, right? You can basically do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's open world, so I mean, there's missions and all that kind of stuff. Just like if you played any of the most recent Assassin's Creed type of stuff, you know.
Those were fun. I like The Witcher 3 and Breath of the Wild for their open world kind of fare.
Yes, and there's so many side quests. You run into somebody and a side quest will open up, and you can choose to go do that. You don't have to do – it's not – that's what I love about the modern games like that. They're just so non-linear, you know what I mean?
Basically just toss the Mongols off the island, right? Like that's the only goal you're given at the beginning?
Pretty much. But there's some really cool stuff they did in that game. Like you're a samurai And there's parts where you have to like sneak up and like kill people from behind, and he's conflicted about that. The character is conflicted, and
going between like ninja techniques and samurai stuff, right?
Exactly right. And you can choose not to be a ninja. You can just go in there and be balls out, because there's like an option when you see a bunch of bad guys, you could actually, there's a triangle button that shows up, and you start like a showdown, and then you hold the button until they, you have to use, it's really, you hold the button, I think it's a triangle button, and they attack you, you let go of the button, and then you, if you do it, if you time it correctly, you can just start killing everybody. It's it's pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at this point in the cycle, I would just wait to the PS5, which is, it's going to be a few months away, you know?
Yeah.
Very cool. Back to the metal. Let's talk about some of the other, the next round of music that we're going to be playing here. Now, you've picked my wife's favorite band of all time.
Oh, we did.
Yes.
Which is
Nevermore.
One other anecdote that might be fun. 2005 was an amazing year. And probably if I had to pick one that is who I am now as far as music, that would be it. Because that was the year that Ghost Reveries and This Godless Endeavor came out. And if you said you get two metal albums and those are the only two you get forever, those would be the two I'd pick.
Wow.
And the Human 100%. Equipment also came out that year, and The Great Cold Distance also came out that year.
Yeah.
That's true, they did. We just did an episode. We're trying to do more like specialty episodes, so we just did one this week on 1995, like all the albums that came out in that year.
Oh, man, that was another great one.
Yeah, so like the first Nevermore album, we talked about that quite at length, and yeah. I actually had Boral Dane on MSRcast at one point, and I did that geeky question, and we talked about Marvel Cinematic Universe for a while.
Nice.
And I was like, yeah, I have this other show, Metal Geeks. He's like, well, can I come on? I was like, dude, whatever you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 100%. It is one of my great regrets. I never got to take my little brother to a Nevermore concert before it all fell apart.
I got to see you. Real lucky with that one, Andy.
Oh, damn, man.
When I heard the story,
here comes. He got to see it like in its Holy Grail incarnation.
Yeah, so it was 2005, I'm pretty sure it was.
That the Opeth tour?
What's that?
When they toured with Opeth?
No, they were actually on a tour with In Flames, Throwdown, and Evergrey. But my parents were still living in Northern Virginia, and there's a great club outside of DC called Jack's.
Yes,
I know that. Now shut down, but it was a great club. Saw lots of amazing metal shows there. But I was back home for the summer, and I happened to see them play a off day of the tour there, where them and Evergrey co-headlined.
Wow.
And so they were getting to play 30 minutes on the In Flames tour, because Throwdown was a higher billing than them, which is a travesty.
Crime.
Yeah, but, horrible.
But it was when Chris Broderick was the second guitar.
You got Chris Broderick and Jeff Loomis on stage shredding it up.
I've seen that live, dude.
Come solo.
I got to see Yogg-Pandra back in the day with Chris Broderick back in the yeah. So the first time I ever saw Nevermore, I saw him maybe like four or five times. The first time was 98 or 99 when they toured with Iced Earth. And I was actually, at that point in my life, I was doing tape trading, like VHS tape trading, and I was recording shows. And I got called out by Worrell at the show, and he came up to me and my buddies afterwards, drunk off his butt. There's a picture
I'm shocked.
Yeah. There's a picture of me holding him up while he's talking to me. I have to pull that photo out. It was so great.
Yes, please. I want to see that.
I would love to see that.
He was such a cool guy, because he called me out during the show. He's like, I hope you're making enough copies for everyone. Just joking. It was great. Wow. Yeah.
God, I miss a band like Nevermore.
Yeah.
They were just so hard to classify. I have this rule in my head where if you have to use like four descriptors, like it's over with. They were kind of their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just forged their own path. And they had several albums that were just shy of perfect.
Progressive gothic power thrash.
Yeah, exactly. Like
that's not bad.
Yeah, you have to sit there. Yeah, pretty much.
I actually like that
topic. On the song that we picked out, Sentient Number 6.
Yep.
It once everyone reads the lyrics to Echoes. I don't think it was necessarily on purpose, but Insignificant and Sentient Number 6 are so far driven into Andrew's brains that while we were writing the lyrics for the robot parts of the album, which for everyone out there, there's robot vocals. So that's something new, kind of Cynic style, but with our own take on it.
Oh, yeah.
But those are definitely influenced, I think, subconsciously by Worldane's robot lyrics.
Yeah,
this seemed like a fitting song to pick out for this.
Yeah, there's a vocal line at the end of the song I did that just the way that he would go about evoking emotion was, again, just unique. Nobody else sounded like him.
No.
Like, you know, in his younger days, he was pretty much your standard issue power metal guy, and he had epic range. And as that kind of waned, he figured out other ways to be unique. Nobody sounded like him at the end of his life. He was very much his own man.
Yeah, even the solo album that came out last year, it was pretty phenomenal, too.
Yep. I actually still regularly spin his first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As much as I have a bone to pick with a certain guy from Soilwork for the Obsidian Conspiracy, never forgiving them for that, but honest to God, that pairing worked so well on that solo album.
Yes, agreed.
Raises to the War Machine was fantastic. Highly recommend. If anybody out there was a fan of Nevermore and somehow missed that, you'll have fun.
And it's not, the whole album is not typical Nevermore, too, which is what I love about it.
It's him. Those vocals are still very much
yes.
that style. So it just doesn't have the, it's more like if you got a Soilwork guitarist to play guitar on instead of Jeff Loomis. Yep, a little bit more poppy. He leans more into his goth side, for sure.
Yes.
Oh, there are a couple of excellent, like, old school 80s goth covers on that album.
Oh, yeah. The Sisters of Mercy cover on there is something else.
Yep.
So when we get back to the Worldane podcast, actually let's get
God
into
rest his soul.
Yes, for sure. He was a legend, man. There'll be nobody else like him. So let's get into this next set of music. We can just go ahead and give a sneak preview. We're gonna first play Nevermore, Sentient Number 6. Then we're gonna play Vatnet Viskar. Hope I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
And
well, they're just Vatnet now, so it's all good.
That's true. They did change their name, didn't they?
Still the old style. This is off of Settler, and like I said earlier, that was the shirt I was wearing when Branson spotted me in public. So,
without that band, there would be no Wheels Dissolve.
Quite possibly.
That's fair to say.
All right, guys, let's check out this next set of music. We'll be back in a few minutes.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
All right, we are back to MSR Cast with the band Wills Dissolve. And they just picked out another set of music that we want to talk about. The last song we heard was the band Below the Sun. Who can tell me about that?
So they are a, well, unfortunately, now I believe they were a great band out of... unfortunately, a couple of months back, it appears that their main guitarist, who may have been the vocalist, I'm not sure. They're a fairly mysterious band since they're out of Siberia. But he passed away. I think their main songwriter passed away.
Oh, wow.
So the song that he played was off their first album, which is just one of the best combinations of post-metal and funeral doom out there. It's just, you know, Siberia has a good amount of funeral doom going on.
Must be
the, Siberia.
I was about to say, it must be the area they live in.
But they really made something special. They had their second album came out, was it out 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was 2018.
And that one got a little bit more melodic, I think, than the first album. But really just excellent songwriting, and it's a shame that that's probably about all we're going to be getting from that band now. But that song in particular that you played was just really, really good music. And I don't think enough people really heard about that band, unfortunately. I think I came across them on the blog No Clean Singing.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of these guys before, and I'm looking at their stuff on Spotify, and it looks right in my alley.
I think I introduced you to them.
I think you might have, like, shown them to me, and then I somehow, like, as one of the bands on the pile of music that I can, like, start picking away at and eventually get into. And, yeah, somehow eventually listen to them, and they're incredible.
Yeah. Both of their albums are still a regular spin for me.
For sure.
Yeah, and it says for fans also like Aeonian Sorrow, Oceans of Grief, Halitar, and Altars of Grief. I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm down for that.
Yeah, checks out.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Sometimes Spotify's suggestions are right. Sometimes they are definitely not.
Sometimes not so much.
Not so much. Especially like if you ever do you guys listen to Spotify? Do you utilize it at all?
No, I mostly find albums on Bandcamp and stream on there, and then buy from there.
I've never had a need for the streaming services because I'm surrounded by people who will just recommend stuff or I'll find it on my own.
Yeah. I use it a lot to find new stuff. They have a release radar every week, so it's like new music and songs. Okay. But sometimes it's like, oh, here's a band that's called Wolf, but it's like a rap group. I'm like, okay, that's not what I'm looking for.
What are you looking for?
Yeah. All right. So let's talk.
We're taking a left turn.
Yeah. This is still pretty good. I think my main issue with Spotify and stuff like that in general is, well, one, their payment practices, but not even talking about that. I like listen to albums straight through. That's just how I listen to music. And I think streaming platforms like that are made for people to discover new music and have stuff on playlists where it's just a random song off the album. And that's not really how I like to experience music.
Gotcha. And your music is on there.
Yep. It is on there.
So if anybody interested in hearing the full album. So
well, for the next album, they're not going to be able to break it up. So,
yeah, exactly. You'll be forced to listen to the whole
You're going to listen to that whole thing if that comes up. So good times.
Whether you like it or not.
That's right. All right.
We need to get a track for how many people skip after 2 minutes. They're like, wait, what's going on? 30 minutes left. Jesus. No. Okay.
They'll never skip. Trust me.
No. Well, thank you.
Vatnit Viskar was the band before that. The song was called Yearn. Let's talk about them. I know they've done a name change recently too.
They did.
They're an interesting band.
Their first two albums were very much that post black metal kind of style. Their bass player, who ended up becoming the vocalist after the name change, is the live and on the album, I think, lead guitarist in
Asteroid?
Asteroid.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Casey from Asteroid.
Speaking of spacey and atmospheric.
Yeah, exactly. They're a great band. So he's now the front man of Vatnet, but I don't think that much time that's going into that band anymore, because Asteroid kind of picked up right when Fat Niviskar kind of had the name change and the old front man left and stuff kind of split. So I think that's more the main focus now. But I caught them. I'd heard their first album, which is a little bit darker and grittier at the production, but it's really good. But they played Rudyard's with the Moth, who was another.
It was a great show.
They played with who? I'm sorry?
Atlas Moth.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, so that album's really good. I don't spin it as much lately. I kind of revisited it when I was coming up with ideas for songs to have you play and everything. But the cover of the album has a kind of mocked up image of a famous image of the teacher that was on board the Challenger flight that exploded. Mm. And so it has that kind of space tie-in. The lyrics aren't necessarily completely about that. The song Yearn does have more space alluding, space exploration alluding lyrics to it, though. So it fit.
Yeah, the concept of a space-based tragedy.
Yeah. I remember when that happened. I was in elementary school when that happened.
Wow.
It's a crazy day. And then, of course, before that was the band everybody knows. That was Nevermore.
Who's Nevermore?
Nevertheless.
Nevertheless?
Never quotes the
Raven. Do they just have songs about ravens?
They do. They should have. Okay. It was all Edgar Allan Poe based.
Yeah.
All of it.
Now that's Ahab.
Right.
Yeah.
The Giant. That's a great album.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys, for hanging out with me tonight. It's been a lot of fun. We have a couple more songs we're going to get to, but I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your albums again and where people can find them, where can people find you on the internet, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so if everyone just goes to Hypnotic Dirge Records, they have a website, they have a Bandcamp. The Bandcamp page has everything on there. If the album has already been released, then it's all name your own price, donation based, and they do have physical copies on there. And I think that would probably be the best way to find the album for pre-order if you don't want to go directly to their website. But we have lots of pre-order options. The album will be coming out on August 28th. And you can also pick up our debut album, The Heavens Are Not on Fire, while you're at it in the, I think we titled it the Cosmos package, because that seemed fitting.
I'm looking at it right now, actually.
Well, there you go.
HypnoticDirgeRecords.com.
There you go.
So yeah, check out, go to their website, pre-order it. I've definitely got to get that patch. That's going on my jacket for sure.
Yeah.
It's cool.
If you live in Houston and you like metal, you really have no excuse.
Or you live in America and you like metal, you have no
excuse.
There you
go. That's you.
Or Canada, or anywhere in the world. Very cool, guys. I appreciate you guys coming on. Now we talked about where they can find the website for your Hypnotic Dirge, but what about your social media and all that good stuff?
So we're on Facebook. If you just look for Wills Dissolve, I think the shortened straight type in version is a / Wills Dissolve Band. If you want to send us any, you know, fan mail or anything like that, it's willsdissolveband@gmail.com. Hate mail will be read, laughed at, and then deleted. we are also on Instagram. I believe we are wills.dissolve on there. And you can also follow Hypnotic Dirge Records on all those platforms as well. And we have a Twitter, but we don't really use it. So there's that.
Yeah. It was my job to update that, and I haven't in a good minute.
Yeah. Not really our preferred thing. Facebook and Instagram are the best way to...
Twitter is a dumpster fire.
Yeah. Instagram, we've been doing more pictures of stuff. Facebook's where all the major updates happen. So that's probably your best one-stop shop for keeping track of what we're up to.
Very cool. So is there any final topics you'd like to talk about or anything you want to say to your fans or people that don't know about you quite yet, what do you want to say to people?
Well, we're just really happy for the support of, you know, people like you. You've been in our corner from the early days and everything, and we really appreciate that, and we appreciate everyone that, you know, decides to give us a listen. I think we appeal the most to fans of the kind of classic golden period Opeth era, but we have our own spin on it. We don't just do folk music and death metal. We take the folk into ambient territories while we're at it, and then we take the death metal into black metal and funeral doom and mm-hmm. kind of further regions. We kind of, I think we take that basic song structure of riding a wave, like in a post-rock kind of song, or in an Opethian style, progressive death metal style genre.
I love that term, Opethian.
Yep. Yeah. And where we kind of alternate the various styles in with each other, but we just focus on writing good transitions so that everything fits together and it fits the storyline that we come up with, because we typically kind of storyboard the albums before really a lot of the music is actually written. It's more of almost a filmmaking process at first for the storyline.
Pretty much. And
then, you know, there's some riffs that, of course, Andrew and I write a lot of stuff all the time, mostly Andrew. He is way more prolific than I am. but we have various riffs kind of set aside, and sometimes something gives a feeling where, you know, the next album is going to be kind of a underwater style theme, and had a riff come up where it was just, it gave us that feeling right away, and everything kind of went from there. But we kind of try and work in some of our classic literature and film influences and how we write and flesh everything out and apply it into kind of a very large concept album style where we can play all the genres that we like. You know, you probably will never ever hear a grindcore riff in one of our songs or a punk riff.
Or if you do it so fast you can't, you don't recognize it.
Yeah, exactly. We might stick in You Suffer right in the middle of an album, mixed down 40 dB. But, you know, we try and work in all the subgenres that we're all influenced by and just find a way to make it fit and preferably keep the songs all above 10 minutes. And in this case, we may have gone a little overboard here, but I think we're proud of it.
Just as good. And
we write music that we like. We aren't trying to, you know, I think a lot of people associate with us with Opeth, the first album, and I think some people's reaction might be to go full-blown and sound as Opethian as possible, but that's not really what we do. So we're just trying to do our own thing, and hopefully people will appreciate it because we're really proud of what we came up with.
Does it bother you guys when people try to pigeonhole you into a certain genre? Because you mentioned so many different styles just in that description right now.
I don't think you could do that successfully, especially after you listen. If you listen to the first album, then this album, then the next one, there'll be commonalities. But I mean, in like just large terms, if the first album was a lot of Opeth and Isis and just, you know, pick your favorite death metal album, and that was basically what that was. This album is more, you know, 80s prog rock, Arion, and also pick your favorite death metal album. The next one is going to be more like Ahab and Nevermore, which you might think is a weird juxtaposition, but so far so good. The early writing is going well on that score, so I guess we'll find out.
I'm interested now. You got my attention.
Oh, there you go. I think the best we've come up with, and my personal favorite for labeling the band, is post-progressive death metal. That's about as good as I've gotten. And
that works.
Druggy emoji, basically. So whatever anyone wants to call us. You know, we had one reviewer on, I think we had mostly good reviews on the first album, but someone really got upset that.
You want to call him out?
I remember this one.
I think the review was written in a way that was like, yeah, they have these really cool clean parts and great, sounds like Ahab. But then they go into this like juvenile death and black metal style, and they should be like Ahab. It's like, okay, I mean, half
he might like, he might like the next one.
Yeah,
except for when I'm playing Nevermore, maybe. There's a couple of riffs that it could easily have, you know, been written by Loomis, because that was the point. Whatever. That was comical reading that guy.
Well, very cool. I appreciate your guys hanging out with us tonight. We have two more songs, but before that, of course, real quick, we are all over your social medias as well, at MSRcast and our sister show at Metal Geeks. You can find us on all kinds of programs that you can download podcasts with, either Spotify or Apple Podcast or any of your favorite podcatchers. Just search for MSRcast or Metal Geeks. We're there together. And visit us at MetalGeeksPodcast.com and MSRcast@gmail.com. If you have any requests or comments or just want to get a hold of me and, you know, hate mail, like they said, is going to be deleted.
But, first
Brad laughed at,
yeah. Then deleted.
But thank you so much for having us on MSRcast. It's been
a pleasure, man.
Thanks, man.
Awesome to talk to you.
So let's talk about the last two bands real quick, and then I'm going to let you guys go. So first, we have Meyer doing Solar Being, and then a band that I didn't think anybody else really talked about, this band Fen with The Dying Stars. And it just definitely fits the ending of your concept here.
Fen will definitely be an Andrew topic. I like them, but not nearly as much as he does. Meyer, I think, was... I'm trying to remember the... I think his... Pythorian or something like that. It was this Elysion guitarist and Tim Lambesis before he went to jail. And then drummer from Devourment.
Yeah.
And it was actually, for how, you know, different all of them were.
Yeah.
A really, really cool EP. And then Tim Lambesis went completely off the deep end and that happened. But I
feel like doing a nickel in the pen for whatever he did puts a damper on your music output.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think it's Ryan Glisson, who used to be in Elysion. He no longer is. But I feel like this is probably the stuff that he wrote for a second album of that. And then he switched lanes and found a new singer and everything for it, because obviously no one wants to be... Well, I guess plenty of people want to be associated with Tim Lambesis now, but probably shouldn't be.
It is what it is.
But really good music, and I highly recommend that, and you'll probably enjoy this next song, and Andrew can talk about Fen for you.
It's high quality atmospheric black metal that still has a sense of rhythm. Some criticisms of a genre like that, you could say that, you know, it just sounds like a wash of noise, but these guys avoid that, and they, the rhythmic structure of how they go about creating their songs is just something that I really dig. If you're a fan, it's not entirely analogous to something like Alsace, but if you like them, mm-hmm. I would bet that you would like this.
I would definitely agree on that. So thank you guys for hanging out, drinking with me tonight and talking about metal and talking about the band. And everybody, please go check out Will's Dissolve. We'll have all the links in our show notes available for you to check them out quickly. And I have one last thing I'd like to say to you guys. Keep it metal.
Keep it metal, man. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, absolutely, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good one. Whenever that'll be.
Zoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.